This is Professor Allen, and welcome to The Quarterman. In most episodes of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I've selected with some degree of randomness. Any book from my comic book collection would be eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. But for episode 12.5 of The Quarterman, I'm looking at feedback. We've covered Quarterman feedback before, but we've done it on Shortbox Showcase, most recently in episode 10 of that show. But in looking at the download numbers and the patterns of feedback, I see that there's not a total overlap between those two shows, so Emily and I decided to separate the feedback. Comments solely for this podcast will be covered on this podcast, while general feedback or iTunes reviews or even feedback emails that cover multiple of the shows on the feed, those will still be covered in Shortbox Showcase. Now, it's been over a month since we did that last feedback recording, and the Quarterman feedback has been piling up, which, I'll be honest, is gratifying. From this point on, I expect to include feedbacks as part of episodes and not do full feedback shows like this. But like I said, it's an experiment, and everything is subject to change. I also wanted to comment on the episode number. Well, that's just me trying to cash in on comic book trends. My choices were to go with a decimal number issue, or issue variant covers somehow, or maybe reboot the entire network with new number ones. No, actually, what happened is I tried to get episodes out every 6 days between the three shows in the feed. That way, if one is a little bit late for whatever reason, we can still average one show per week, which is the goal. We've actually kept really close to that. The longest we've ever gone between shows is 10 days. But because of final exams for me, and work and volunteer commitments for Emily, and Christmas parties and dinners and family events and this, that, and the other, we were looking at a 14-day hole in the schedule. There was a Christmas show and a New Year show, so we couldn't just slide those forward in the calendar like we'd normally do if our schedule falls through. They had specific scheduled dates of release. So, a hole in the schedule, plus plans to change the way we do feedback, plus a bunch of emails, equals episode 12.5. I'm actually not a fan of decimal numbering. For one thing, it's got to drive collectors and retailers and sites like Mike's Amazing World completely crazy. Especially if it's Marvel, where they'll throw in decimal issues years and years after the whole number issues were originally released, so there can be a huge disconnect between the numerical order and release date chronology. In terms of podcast, though, I think I'm in good company. The Avengers Spotlight Show has released 3 episodes so far. Number 1, number 1.5, and number 1.75. And that show spun out of Back to the Bins, which I think literally had 5 episodes, maybe more, between numbers 99 and 100. So, there you go. What I've learned from comic book companies and comic book podcasters is this. A bandwagon is like a grenade. Anytime you see one, you jump on it. So the relatively geeky network has joined the decimal age. Whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Is it possible that I just coined that phrase, the decimal age? If so, let's go with that. If not, let's go with that anyway. We got Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, Chromium Age, and the Decimal Age. That would be awesome. Try to use that as often as possible, and if you wouldn't mind footnoting this podcast, that would be great. Actually, it is my true and honest intention that this will be the only decimal episode we ever have in this feed. We do have feedback to address, and we'll get to that right after this.
Hey everyone, Sean Engel here.
And strange disembodied voice here.
Hey, it's good to hear from you. It's been a long time. How have you been? What have you been up to?
Oh, not much. Working with other podcasters, palling around with Simon Cowell, prepping for the Mayan apocalypse. You know, the usual.
Neat. Anyhow, glad we got back together since the show, Just One of the Guys, is coming to a turning point, and since you were there at the beginning, I thought it'd be appropriate that you be here now.
Ooh, are you finally changing formats and doing your epic coverage of the Al Milgram Opus US 1?
No, I'm going to start coverage of the Kyle Rayner stories in Green Lantern.
And that supposedly is more impressive than the trucker who can receive CB signals through a metal plate in his head?
Undoubtedly. Plus, I'm still going to be covering the ongoing saga of Guy Gardner.
Ooh, will he be getting a metal plate in his head which allows him to receive CB signals?
No, nothing quite that ridiculous. Although the stories will involve him getting alien DNA, becoming a living weapon, and punching Nazi dinosaurs.
Seriously?
Yep.
So all of this, yet the epic tale of a trucker who's vying to avenge his death of his brother caused by a man who sold his soul to the devil for a satanic 18 healer is just too goofy?
Precisely.
Whatever. So where can I find out about all these changes?
Lots of places. For one, you can go to www.justoneoftheguys.libsyn.com to download the shows, check out the covers of the books, and leave comments on individual show postings. You can also find the show on iTunes just by searching for Just One of the Guys podcast, and you can leave a review there as well.
So after you finish these books up, you'll cover US 1?
Maybe. I've still got that Dallas Dynasty show with J. David Weider to do. And Scott Gardner has approached me about doing an NFL Super Bowl podcast that he wanted to do in conjunction with the 25th anniversary of its release. It's come check it out every Friday at justoneoftheguys.libsyn.com.
And we're back. On the most recent feedback episode we did, which was over on Shortbox Showcase, we covered emails from Ben Avery regarding the Hex Number 1 episode, Episode 6, and from Michael Bradley, the Superman vs. Bloodsport story, Episode 7. So that brings us to Episode 8, the second part of the John Sable locked room-style mystery on the fancy yacht with all the Hollywood types. To be honest, that's one of my favorite episodes, and we got no feedback. I understand it's a really obscure title, and as much as I love it, you listeners might not have much to say about it. Although he has about as many issues as Moon Knight or Rom, and neither of them ever had a live-action TV show like Sable did. But moving on to Episode 9, Nick Fury's Howling Commandos. At the time, I commented that that was my least favorite issue that I'd covered, and now, with a few more issues under my belt, that is still the case. But it did generate some feedback. In that episode, I mentioned that I was disconcerted reading it, as it was so similar to Frankenstein Agent of Shade, which came after, but I read first. Both Jason Trenner and Luke Giaconetti emailed me, pointing out that the concept of monster squads existed long before either of these titles that I've mentioned, so it's not like one of them stole from the other. They both have lineages that go back decades. Both of them mentioned the Creature Commandos, for example. Jason traced that team back to 1980 in an issue of Weird War Tales with a story by J.M. DeMatteis and Pat Broderick. Jason found it amusing that both DeMatteis and Giffen ended up writing similar types of stories given their long JLI partnership. Luke made a major confession, saying that he'd never even heard of this series. If Luke Giaconetti has never heard of a monster-based comic book series, that may explain why it ended up so quickly in the cheap bins. We call that a marketing fail, Marvel. Luke added this, "Personally, I'm more of a fan of the Legion of Monsters, the core team of Morbius, the living vampire, Werewolf by Night, and Khonsu, the living mummy, and Manphibian, plus Elsa Bloodstone." Part of my reply to Luke was whether he could go a single day without mentioning either Scrooge McDuck or Morbius the Living Vampire. Give it a rest, Luke. I also asked him if he had just said Manphibian. He admitted that Manphibian was a pretty minor monster character. Yeah, no kidding. And that he was basically a creature from the Black Lagoon knockoff. In Episode 10, I gave this podcast's origin story. I did, weirdly enough, get some questions between the time I recorded that episode and when it went out, asking the types of questions that I answered in that episode. This was from Dave Elliott, who I actually mentioned in that episode as producing one of the podcasts I use as a bit of a template for this one. He does the Fantastic Forecast and has put out more than 300 episodes, each one covering one issue of that title and each one about 10 to 15 minutes long. Now, that show is the longest-running index show that I know of, having covered almost 25 years of Fantastic Four. But he asked about the process for finding the books, for keeping a database, and those were actually the types of questions that I had already answered, even though that episode had not come out yet. Dave said he liked the randomness of the Quarterbin podcast, and I commented to him that even though he was halfway through the FF run, he still had hundreds of issues and episodes ahead of him. But he said, "I'm looking forward to doing the next 100 issues of the FF. I haven't read them in a long time, and if I recall, most of them are terrible. I mean, she-thing! I can't wait!" So I guess randomness does have some advantages. Episode 11 found me discussing an issue of Micronauts, and this episode generated some emails, but was also the most commented upon Facebook posting I've ever done for the show. A good friend of mine, who I haven't seen in probably 15 years, Paul Good, posted this understated comment. "Excuse me, but best comic ever." The Irredeemable Shag also posted a comment. "Love me some Micronauts. Only started reading them a few years ago, but these old comics bring me so much joy. So far I've read up into the 40s, and several of mine came from 50-cent bins. Haven't found any 25-cent boxes yet. Look, I know everybody's jealous about my LCS's regular 25-cent sale. I totally understand." The email bin for this issue included another note from Jason Trenner. He did gently call me out for making a big deal of Bill Mantlo's contribution to Transformers, when, in fact, he only did the first two issues of the comic. Jason is known on the internets as Fanboyimus Prime, and he's obviously a big fan of the Transformers. He did recommend issues of that title by Simon Furman, as well as comics by David Hein. Now, I admitted to him that I included Mantlo's Transformers work really only because it fit my narrative of Mantlo seeming to specialize in licensed properties. But I should have suspected that I'd never get a casual Transformers reference by him. Ben Avery also emailed me on this issue. Ben is one of the hosts of the Strangers and Aliens podcast, as well as Welcome to Level 7, a podcast about the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. Here is his email. "Okay, so this is my sweet spot. I had a single issue of Micronauts in my collection as a kid, and it not only introduced me to that concept, but also introduced me to Ant-Man. And I had one Micronaut action figure. As an adult, I found almost the entire run of Micronauts while perusing the quarter bins, hello, in a comic shop at my sister-in-law's. I easily found the rest on eBay, including the Micronauts crossover miniseries with X-Men. By the way, J. David Weider referenced that storyline on the Facebook post. Back to Ben's email. "Here's the awesome thing about Micronauts. The series featured characters and situations that changed over time. And another awesome thing, it actually ends. There's a definitive ending to the series. And it's actually very good, a surprisingly strong story, much like ROM, actually. These two are not as successful as Star Wars, although it's obvious that Marvel's success with Star Wars inspired toy companies to try to use comics as a toy tie-in to help promote the toy. And I'll interject here, that's a point I hadn't thought about, that Star Wars, the success of the Marvel Star Wars comic, opened the eyes of other movie makers and also toy makers that their characters could have a long life in comic books. That was an interesting point, Ben." He also continued, "With the rights issues making collected editions impossible, these are real gems if they're in someone's long boxes. Both Micronauts and ROM are truly masterpieces of licensed superhero sci-fi epics." Well said, Ben. Well said. You know, I really love stories that end, whether it's a mini-series or a short arc or a one-and-done. I love stories that have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I'm glad to know that Micronauts qualifies. Episode 12 is the last Quarterbin that I've released as of this recording, and that was the Moon Knight episode. Again, Ben Avery offered feedback, and it was really interesting. You know, I commented in that episode about Moon Knight's similarities to Batman and the similarities of both to Sherlock Holmes, but Ben pointed out a particular connection or reference that I did not see. He wrote, "Your synopsis of this issue gave me deja vu. I kept having James Bond flashbacks. This came from the returning lost love, the investigation during Mardi Gras, the war on drugs. I can't remember the movie, but an early Roger Moore had him going after drug lords during Mardi Gras, and of course there's always the tragic love story. I may be crazy, but for this story anyway, from your synopsis, I couldn't help wondering if Bond was an influence here, in addition to Batman." Wow, Ben, that was a connection I did not see. James Bond, I confess, is one of the major blind spots in my geekdom. So if anyone knows of the connection that Ben's getting at, feel free to let me know. Steve Rogers also emailed about that episode, and forget the obvious joke, no, he's not Captain America. So anyway, Nomad emailed me about the topic of blue-tinted hair in comics. And he relayed one of the more bizarre stories I've heard recently. "Professor Allen, after hearing your comments about the overuse of the blue tint in the Moon Knight issue, it made me think of one of the most insane debates I've ever heard on sports talk radio. Does Superman have blue hair?" Yep, one of the hosts was convinced, due to the blue-tinted ink, that Kal-El, or Clark's hair, was black and blue. Somehow this fact, quote-unquote, got strengthened when a caller called to say they saw this listed on an amusement park ride's thumbnail bio. Hair, black with blue highlights. Sadly, this was never corrected as a simple, "notice that it's never blue in the same place all the time," like the accursed Reed Richards Gray Temple wraparound, which would have sufficed as an explanation. I answered Nomad that it was interesting that an amusement park's description would be considered comic book canon. I also posted a picture of myself with blue hair at the show's website, relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. Yeah, I lost a bet with a student. Anyway, he also asked about the cover prices of the issues I've talked about. You got the Moon Knight issue at half off, so I'm wondering, I'd imagine there'd be some in the bins, bad shape maybe. But still, if you ever got a 25-cent comic as a markup, or as the original cover price. I told Nomad that the first episode of 2014, episode number 14, will have a comic with a markup price tag. But that was a special case, as you hear. Other than that, the Micronauts issue at 40 cents is the cheapest cover price so far that I've covered. It's actually the lowest cover price that I've ever bought from the Quarterbins at all. Now, Emily picked up a pretty beaten-up copy of the 1977 Black Lightning number 2 for eventual coverage on her Bronze Age show. That one had a 30-cent cover price. The vast majority of what is in the cheap bins at my LCS are from 1985 to 2000, so I don't envision running across a regular issue of any title at or under 25 cents, but if I do, it's a definite pickup. As a matter of fact, the poster inside the comic shop advertising the 25 cent sale includes the tagline, "Come see what the 90s were all about," which I thought was pretty hilarious. Well, that brings us to the bottom of the email bag. So that wraps up my coverage of, well, my coverage of you guys and your awesome feedback, which I really appreciate you sending in. Speaking for Emily as well, we both really appreciate how well-received our podcasting efforts have been by podcast listeners as well as from fellow podcasters. Subscriber and download info is fun to look at, especially on days when they move in the right direction. But the emails, the Facebooks, the Twitters, those represent communication. They represent connection. So as the saying goes, keep those cards and letters coming, and we'll keep replying. Until next episode, when I cover whatever I promised to cover at the end of last episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the Quarterbin. The Quarterbin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening.
Professor!